Good evening, this is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is illustrator and artist Andrew DeGraff, and we're talking about his book, which has a text by A.D. Jameson, Cinemaps, an Atlas of Great Movies. Andrew, welcome to the show. It's a real pleasure to talk to you.
Good to talk to you, too.
There's only certain books I pick up doing this show, and I have to read 2 to 4 books every single week. 52 weeks a year, decades, for decades, my mind is fried. But there are certain books that I just like, I don't know how else to phrase it, but tickled me pink. And this is one of them.
Thank you.
This was, first of all, it's visually stunning. It's really creative and it's really fun. How did this project start?
It's a little bit of a weird kind of generative process, because I, working as an editorial illustrator for magazines, I was asked to do maps for different travel features.
Sure. Had you had any cartography experience before that? Like, did you have training in cartography?
No. specifically none whatsoever. But I grew up. My mom, I grew up spending most of my childhood sleeping under a comforter of U.S. states and state capitals.
Oh,
and
nice.
I had maps plastering the walls of my childhood bedroom. So I think there's sort of, I think with a lot of people that we know a bit more about maps than we think we do, maybe.
Or yeah,
we take in a lot, even if we...
Well, they sort of infiltrate. And you're right. You're much younger than I am, but I was like fascinated with maps that had all the little pictures on them for like their resources, stuff like that.
Yeah. Oh, I love those. Yeah, or even a maps of ski mountains. You know, like illustrated maps. There's just always something.
Like the stuff you'd see on placemats.
Yeah, I always was attracted to that, and so really, like, once I was doing them in an editorial context. I was working doing pop culture shows with a gallery in LA, Gallery 1988, and I thought, nobody else is really mapping movies, or they're focusing on the emotional or the comedic content of the film, and not an analysis of some sort,
like a geographical analysis.
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was just some way to take, and really my initial idea was just to do a portion of the film with none of the characters. So it was just the setting. Just because I thought that, to me, those movies that we experienced or were meant to experience, like, as the protagonist within the scene, that we're sort of peering over their shoulders or walking in their shoes, and there's something like really strong about some of those. Like, you could set me on the set of a movie, not tell me what it was, and in a second I would tell you, this is the underground of Goonies, or this is, but those landscapes are really identifiable in those.
Well, there's another element. I mean, even as an adult, when I'm watching these films, and let's keep on the subject of Goonies, okay? Like,
sure.
I sort of want to fill in all the details of how it all fits together. Like the weird physical, geographical details of, like, okay, wait a minute, they went from point A to point B. I want to know that. And I remember when I was a little kid, I used to actually play stuff like that. Like, I'd have little guys, and I'd actually set out like a set that sort of like... King Kong was the original movie of King Kong was a huge influence on this when it started to play on TV. And so we would actually set up, like a Kong Island and all that stuff. And I totally get where these maps are coming from. It makes so much sense.
Yeah. And what's funny, or at least I found, is like within mapping mapping the character's progress through different areas of the film, I've been struck by often how much, that 80% of the map is really travel time of the characters.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yeah.
They'll like meet up someplace, but that like 80% of what I actually end up mapping is actually not content that's in the film. However, this is the real distance that they are supposed to have covered, and even certain characters who disappear from the plot for 40 minutes.
I know. Yeah, like, well, and this brings up the other important thing that the audience needs to know is not only is it a physical representation in your head of what the whole world looks like in these films. We're not talking the sets. We're actually talking the imagined world of these sets. But it's the flow diagrams of all the main characters in these films, which sometimes gets really hilarious because there's a ton of them.
Yeah. and that sort of, you know, that network of motion, which I think is one of the other things that interested me in doing them was one where a lot of people do artwork about movies, but it's really one specific moment.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And it's like trying to, how do you paint a whole film? And initially I started doing kind of smaller sections of films, again with no characters. And then once I started to include character, like their plot line, literally as an arrow that follows their path, it really kind of like realized like, oh, I can do the whole, this is the way I can do a whole movie on a piece of paper. Of course, then it was just a matter of doing them and doing the research, and a lot happens in a 2-hour movie. Those are Indiana Jones movies.
Oh my God,
they're not skimping on locations.
No, they're not, and nor are you on the maps. The maps are hilarious.
Oh, they're so fun though.
But let's reel it back to you as a kid. So you must have loved films as a child.
Yeah, and it's funny because I was a 1 hour of TV a week kid.
Oh.
I was not that much.
So you were deprived.
Well, I think, I certainly went as, we went to the movies, but it wasn't, and I think what's kind of interesting is talking to other people of my generation. I'm 39 now, but that we grew up with, like, for instance, at my JV or eighth grade basketball team, we practiced after the sixth grade team. So we had 2 hours until we practiced where we stayed at school, and every single day we watched Hoosiers because that was at a time when you could own the VHS copy of Hoosiers. And so you just watched it every day, and going to friends' house. We went undefeated. I will. I mean, I don't know what that maybe.
You're attributing that to Hoosiers. It got you in the spirit.
Maybe, yeah. It's a great movie.
When I'm thinking about it from a mapping point of view, it's really a limited map.
It is. It is. I'm considering doing it though. I think it could be.
Oh, you should.
Kind of fun, but it's a great movie.
A lot of these films are the films of your childhood that are included in this, and that's what I love about it. We've talked about Goonies, but it's also the Indiana Jones movies, the Star Wars movies, but you've got a weird selection of films in here that are pretty strange. Like you've got Metropolis, which is fantastic. That's like a major work of art is your Metropolis map, because it's a single big, huge ziggurat with all the different levels into it. And then you've got, I think the craziest map you did was the Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah, that was fun.
Because unlike the Indiana Jones movies where you did one film at a time, you essentially did one gigantor map of Middle Earth, and it's not the map done by the author.
Yeah, it's based off of it. I only had to do one. I sort of took a view almost as if you were looking from the Tolkien map was really tough to deal with because it basically has the Misty Mountain. The Misty Mountains run in dead center.
Yeah,
the continent.
Yeah.
Like the continent is almost perfectly square, and you have sort of like Mordor is in the is in the southeast. And you have Minas Tirith anyway, I just sort of had to like descend and skew. And what I actually did take the Tolkien map and in sketching it, I actually took the map into Photoshop and was like distorting it so that things, even if they ended up, that there was like a relative correctness.
Got it.
Even if there isn't sort of, I did have to take the Grey Havens and move it. But most people are willing to give me that one. That's sort of like, there's a mountain ridge that runs on the, but it was very, that one was, it was about 1,000 hours of painting. But now, it's just a, just a joy. I was dreaming the soundtrack. I just could not escape the.
Before we talk about specific maps, I want to talk about the work involved in this. What materials are you using to create these maps?
I mostly work on paper with gouache, although I also use inks and some small, like just a micron pen. It's just a felt tip pen that has archival ink.
Those are unforgiving materials.
Yeah, you can't make big mistakes.
God.
But I've gotten sort of used to it, but you do get worried after when you're 180 hours into a 240 hour painting,
oh my God.
You're taking a sip of your coffee and a little bit splashes out or something as you move too quickly and you have a moment of panic.
Oh my God. What's the average size of these maps? Not the ones, now the reproductions I'm going to mention for the benefit of the audience. There's large reproductions in the book. But you also include blow-ups of sections in every single map. So what's the original size of most of these maps?
Most of them are...
Life size.
Most of the early ones are around somewhere in the 16 by 20 range or 18
by 24. So you're putting way amazing amounts of detail in a very small area.
Yeah. Yeah, but it is gouache is which is it's basically an opaque watercolor.
Oh yeah, I know gouache.
It is really great for fine detail.
Oh wow!
And so it really and certainly like as I the more of them I do, the more I sort of how much detail can I get into?
I mean, every one of these maps has got sort of an alarming amount of detail in it. So you obviously do a lot of pre-sketching.
Yeah, quite a bit.
Yeah. Talk to me about research on the film. I mean, let's take a movie like Silence of the Lambs, and we'll get back to that in a second. But
sure.
Researching the locations, like one of the things that always freaked me out is when she gets to his sort of underground lair there with all the weird rooms. I mean, how did you figure that out?
It's hard. And the research part is really funny because some stuff that you think is going to be quite difficult is easier than you think. And some stuff that you, that you think is going to be easy is just incredibly hard to figure out because sets are sets,
right?
And the location. Silence of the Lambs was a great one because it has a lot of real locations. A lot of it filmed around Pittsburgh,
right?
And so, really looking at one of the other things I find interesting is where they were pretty true in that movie to the places, the courthouses. I think the city hall, or it is actually the courthouse.
Mm-hmm.
But finding, like when they say that they're at City Hall in so-and-so town, of course it's not. It's just, it's an old library or something that looks better. But for that one, it was pretty true. So it's a lot of, I spent a lot of time with that one. It was nice because they have a lot of real locations. So a lot of it, even using Google Earth to really look at the dimensionality of the whole building and kind of reviewing that. And it's great for a lot of the exteriors. That you can sort of compile together, and I just build, big Photoshop pages just full of every reference piece that I can find. But some of the interiors are really tricky, and you have to. One of the issues is that I work on sort of almost like a diamond isometric grid most
okay.
of the time.
Yep.
So there's very little, or no recession into space as you. They go further back into the map. But that does mean that you can really only show like two walls at the same time where characters can go in and out of. So either you have to cut away and those really tight interior spaces where, that final scene is so important.
In Silence of the Lambs. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just an incredible tight space. And it was really nice to find with that one that it does actually work because they had Jonathan and Debbie had gone in and they had really designed it as a full set.
Oh, wow.
So I think they used, like, removable walls.
Oh, I never knew that.
But it seems like there was, I mean, there was a cohesive thing, which lots of times what is, I find kind of interesting is, you know, you look at where walls from some sets have been used in other shops, and there's we've now abandoned that this is supposed to, or it's just the idea of a physical space without actually being one. But that one, they had them, and I found in the production work that somebody had done a nice little model.
Oh, nice.
Of the basic layout. And that's a lot of the fun of doing the maps, is that you really get to go in and look at, you know, for instance, in the scene in Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade where they're supposed to be in Venice and they have that boat chase.
Yeah.
That's in Liverpool. And you get to find out like one of the boats was an old transatlantic cable ship. You know, they have the real names are still on the back, and you can find out, like, research about them. As a lover of trivia, that stuff always brings me a great amount of joy.
Oh my god!
But Silence of the Lambs had a bunch of very interesting, you know, because it has that the claustrophobia.
Yeah.
Of Lecter's cell, and the, you know, with the sort of dungeon-esque ward that,
yep,
Hannibal Lecter starts in, and then you also have that echoed in Buffalo Bills. But yeah, very.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is illustrator and artist Andrew DeGraff. And we're talking about his book with text by A.D. Jameson. And I cannot recommend this book enough. It's a beautiful collection of works, too. Cinemaps, an atlas of great movies. And that brings up an important point about these maps, Andrew, is that they work as artworks. First of all, you've made interesting color choices on every single map. Can you talk to me about that?
Yeah, it's
like, for instance, in Metropolis, it's all, you know, dingy grays. Yeah. And then in The Wizard of Oz, it's all sorts of crazy colors. And there's really interesting color choices in every single one.
Yeah, that's one of my kind of favorite. And very often I'm working on a tones piece of paper, and trying to find they're kind of a limited palette.
Yeah.
So I have to kind of figure out something that goes with it. And some of them kind of go into a more fully painted reality. And some of them are, some of them can be a bit more, for instance, like Back to the Future, is a map where I have basically a layout of 1985 Hill Valley over 1955 Hill Valley. And they're just sort of coded as different colors. So, you know, like, so some of them, it makes sense where, like, color you can use as sort of a thematic breakdown.
Yep.
Of, say, if there's two different countries or different times. And that's one of my joys, is, like, trying to find I felt both for Metropolis and Wizard of Oz that they needed a full world.
Well, yeah, and
choosing those colors to, like, really, you know, in Metropolis, really get that smoky,
yeah,
grit, you know, and then Wizard of Oz, just the sort of, I mean, that one I really felt the whole time like I was painting a theme park map, you know, that's real. I mean, partially because it just looks like, you know, like Disneyland, you know. 1960 Disneyland.
Well, it's also a fairly trippy collection of colors that you used on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, as you mentioned in The Wizard of Oz, and this has always struck me about The Wizard of Oz, is they use these regionalist-inspired matte paintings for the backgrounds, which are sort of works, yeah, of art in themselves. But it's interesting because they never visit those those places.
No.
They're always in the distance, these weird hills that look like they're from Kansas near the river or something like that.
And they're like cliffs, like there's,
right,
these, but what must be like huge cliffs.
But they never go there.
No, and they never, and they actually change quite a bit in character throughout. Like, there's a couple that seem to be reused or moved around a bit for a larger background, yeah. But I had a fun time trying to, like, figure out what that actual land would would look like.
Yeah.
Taking something that is absolutely 100% a matte painting that only fools you in the, you know, as opposed to, you know, later matte paintings in Star Wars or something, which are completely convincing. those are really expressionistic. It really has like more the feeling of theater than film.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was
well, like the old style backdrops that they used to see used in theater. So it has the painting style looks regionalist to me, which was the popular painting style that was going on in America at the time. I just want to talk to you. We're going to run out of time before we finish. When you do the Indiana Jones films. And I noticed this. You wanted to capture the frantic, fast-paced nature of the films, and you really did. Those maps are insane.
Oh, that was just pure joy. I mean, watch those movies 30 or 40 times. They just don't the slapstick, the moments. And that one was, I think, very interesting. I did those. I'd initially done like the Star Wars maps, which are almost more like a New York subway map.
Yeah, yeah.
It's sort of aesthetic where it's, you know, brighter colors. And in a way, like to me, like Star Wars felt a lot about destiny, and it was people going along these kind of paths. And Indiana Jones was a very different feel. Like it has much more that sort of, you know, his sort of slapstick, you know, making mistakes and backtracking and those great frenetic physical comedy moments are just they're so good.
What the reader finds themselves doing is with their finger is tracing each of the characters like sort of life pathways through these maps. Yeah. They're weird what these maps do to you. What I mean, so many of these are my favorite. I want to say that I think one of the weirdest ones was the Breakfast Club. Because it's a very small area the Breakfast Club happens in. Yet there's all these little pathways that everybody followed throughout this dense area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that one I was planning actually to do Ferris Bueller, and I just thought that Breakfast Club would be unmappable.
Yeah.
Which the more I thought about it, in a way, the more I wanted to do it, because you would have all the scenes that take place in the library, you know, that it really, like, it's almost like a prison film.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it just has, like, in a way, that's one of the ones where I knew the least about how it would kind of look at the finish. But I just sort of thought that, in a way, what that movie did, I mean, so brilliantly, is it's, you know, it is the inside of a the school is a teenager's mind, and the characters are the different voices inside. And what you get is, you know, almost like neurons firing, you know, and this sort of like frenetic, confusing jumble.
Yeah.
And I thought that might look cool in this sort of almost brutalist structure of the high school, which is, you know, a great modernist, you know, sort of new municipal brutalist high school.
And it's weird that I found that. Well, for me, your most open map was The Shining. It's like there's a lot of space in The Shining map.
That one was one of that's one of the ones I actually think I still want to go back. And what I basically did with that one is like I really want to show the isolation of the hotel.
Yeah.
And really get sort of just the visual drama of that one. But that also meant that I couldn't go in to the interior of the hotel, and that's still something.
You need to be working larger, Andrew. You need to be working like 22 feet by 24 feet, and then you can put all the detail in it that you want.
I you know, that's it's on my list to do some really, you know, the Lord of the Rings one, which is about 52 inches wide, was my first to give sort of sofa size, and
Jesus.
I love doing it. It does. It just becomes a question of really of hours. But it is. I like to have this book was about 7 years of work on and off.
I can really believe it when I look at a map like the Clueless map, which is another incredibly silly dense one. That's dense. The pathways in that are insane.
Yeah, comedies. what you don't think
is that true? You mean you find comedy pathways are really complicated?
Oh, Rushmore.
Oh yeah.
Because there's I mean, you really have like, I mean, sometimes like hundreds of vignetted scenes as characters meet up. They might only exchange two lines, but they're there. And then there's another shot. And I found that really interesting to see, like, as you're trying to get, trying to recreate the film. And it's very interesting because the process is almost like you're reverse storyboarding a film.
That's right. That's right.
Bringing it back down into its component scenes. And when I was writing out the kind of sketch for Rushmore, I just sort of had a moment of, if I want all these characters, okay, this is it'll be interesting, you know, the color, it'll work out, you know, just.
We're almost out of time, okay,
sure.
Andrew, but I want to ask you one more question about the typography for the titles.
Oh, sure.
That's a crazy typography. I found it deciphering the titles of the films would like take me minutes. I'd be sitting there going, and they're really beautiful. I want to say this. It's incredible. This whole book is an artistic and beautiful book, and incredibly original. But the titles were in this. What is that called?
This was my sort of snooty artist reasoning for for like making type that was.
Say no more. It looked like film. It looks like film.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I was really thinking of taking like the dimensional arrows and turning them into a script. Like my sort of hope was that most of them would be take some initial deciphering, but then once you saw it, you couldn't unsee it.
It was like one of those 3D pictures printed, like you sort of make your eyes go weird. And then all of a sudden the title comes out and you go, whoa.
I wasn't saying, like, oh, yeah.
I know. It's like part of the whole puzzle of the pictures. We're completely out of time. My guest tonight is illustrator and artist Andrew DeGraff. And we've been talking about his book, which, again, you've got to see this book. It's amazing. And it's wonderful artwork, too, with text by A.D. Jameson, which adds a whole other dimension to this book, too. Cinemaps, an atlas of great movies. Andrew, it's been a real pleasure.
Oh, well, thanks so much for having me.
You listen to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.